You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings to all. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for our Blue Friday episode, the first one of the offseason, my co-host Nick Lee. We've got a loaded show coming your way. We're going to be dishing out some end-of-season superlatives for the Seahawks. Should be a lot of fun. Glad to have you listening in. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. After coming up short on a couple opportunities in the past, Scott Fitterer is officially leaving the Seahawks to join forces with coach Matt Rhule as the new general manager of the Panthers. Nick, Fitterer has been with the Seahawks organization since way back in 2001 when he joined them as a scout. He's one of the rare people that has still been in the organization that was here for their first Super Bowl run back in 2005. He was maintained when John Schneider and Pete Carroll took over back in 2010. He's continued to work his way up the ladder. For a while, he was the co-director of player personnel. And then this year, they promoted him to vice president of football operations. He has been a key component in the Seahawks player evaluation department over the years. And you look back at some of the big-time players that the Seahawks brought in that set up this run, this extended run of having 9 playoff appearances in 11 years. Your Russell Wilsons, your Bobby Wagners of the world, Cam Chancellor, Richard Sherman, and Scott Fitterer has been at the center of scouting and eventually drafting and developing those players. He has been an integral part of this front office for nearly 2 decades. Now he finally gets a chance to be a general manager in the NFL. It's a huge loss for the Seahawks, and they're going to have to really search hard to find a viable replacement for him.
Yeah, he's going to be sorely missed for sure. I mean, when you look back at 2001, that's Mike Holmgren's 3rd year, and that was the first year of the Matt Hasselbeck and Sean Alexander era. So we're going way back in the archives, especially for those true 12s out there. That's, you know, before the Seahawks had Russell Wilson, they had this man named Matt Hasselbeck and Sean Alexander at running back, and they were actually really cool, and that he was part of the development of those, and Sean Alexander became an MVP running back, a record-setting running back, and like you mentioned, the Super Bowl in 2005, the conference championship, and he was a vital, vital part of the most successful era of this franchise's history, 14 playoff appearances, 3 NFC championships, and a Super Bowl title. And the players you mentioned that he was part of, he helps draft, and Russell Wilson, Earl Thomas, the Legion of Boom, Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, and some of those diamonds in the rough that the Seahawks seem to find year in and year out. Scott Fitterer was absolutely right in there and finding those guys and developing those guys. And he's going to be a tough one to replace. And to the average fan, perhaps that might not be a huge deal, but I think in a couple of years, we might notice that there's either a shift in philosophy or maybe not as successful of drafting or evaluating or developing players. And that hopefully doesn't happen. But unfortunately, if it does, you might point to this moment in Scott Fitterer leaving, because, you know, anytime you're a winning organization, and the Seahawks have been one of the most winningest organizations in the NFL, and I would argue the team of the past decade of the NFC, anytime you're one of those franchises, other inferior teams are going to want your guys. That's a compliment. And so this is the price of winning.
Yeah, it's one of those prices. We talk about roster turnover. When you have a winning football team, it's really difficult to be able to keep your players. You can't pay everybody. Kind of the same thing when you're talking about people in the front office, your executives, especially somebody like Fitterer that has climbed the ladder from just being a scout to being the vice president of football operations. He really did work his way up to being one of the most important people in Seattle's front office that has really been integral. He's been vital to bringing in the talent that has helped them have this sustained run of success. If there's a silver lining here, he has been in the hunt for a general manager job for several seasons. I believe this is actually the only team he interviewed with this year, but I know the last couple years he had interviewed with a few other teams and came up just short. So the Seahawks have been preparing for this moment, and they have some other scouts that they are going to be looking at believing can step up just as Fitterer did at one time and move up the ladder. But again, you're talking about a guy that's been with this organization nearly two full decades. He's left quite an imprint on this franchise, and it's going to be very difficult to replace him. And I think the new team that he's joining, the Panthers ended up falling short of my expectations this year. They were a team that I thought might be a sleeper because I have that much respect for Matt Rhule as a coach. But I think you look at some of the young talent that they have, Derek Brown and Jeremy Chinn, two of their top draft picks. They also have Yetur Gross-Matos, who was one of our favorite defensive ends in the draft process. They've got some really good young players on that roster. And Teddy Bridgewater, we'll see what the decision is at quarterback. He had an up-and-down season his first year as a starter there, but they are going to have an early enough draft pick. They may be able to go out and get a quarterback like maybe Zach Wilson from BYU would land to the Carolina Panthers. And I can tell you Matt Rhule would be really excited if he able to get his hands on a player like that. With some of the other young talent they've got, they're going to get Christian McCaffrey back healthy. So this is a big addition for the Panthers, who fired their general manager recently and were ready to move forward with a refreshed start. They think Scott Fitterer can be that guy. And when you consider how important he's been in Seattle's process of roster building, I think he's got a great opportunity to really be a game changer there, teaming up with Rhule, who I think is one of the better young coaches that has entered the NFL.
And from a human standpoint, you know, good for Fitterer, good that he is. I'm sure in his line of work, this is a dream scenario. He's going to a good spot, like you mentioned. I think that Carolina's got some good things going on. And, of course, in Seattle, you're not worried about your general manager at the moment because he just signed a deal. John Schneider just signed a deal through 2027. So he's not the sole, you know, dictator on this franchise and the decisions they make, but it's nice to have a little stability, and maybe you can afford to lose a guy like him and Fitterer and not feel too much of an impact. But yes, I think especially if you're in the room, if you're in the office and in the locker room, you're going to feel that void that Fitterer will leave, and hopefully the Seahawks can fill that. And they do have an eye for talent on the field. Let's hope they have an eye for talent in the front office as well.
And John Schneider has proven that he does. You think about some of the guys they brought in that have quickly worked up the ladder since he arrived in 2010. He does have a good eye for scouts that can move up and take on expanded roles. So we'll see who's next in line. We saw Ed Dobbs leave the team a few years ago. Now he's with the Indianapolis Colts, and he was a guy that was up for a few of these general manager positions. And so they have been able to find and develop scouts and move them up the ladder. And so there will be an opportunity for somebody to fill Fitterer's shoes. Nonetheless, it is a big loss for Seattle's front office. There's no question about it. When we come back in the second quarter, we're going to be dishing out some end of season superlatives. We're going to start on the offensive side of the football, looking at things like most improved, biggest disappointment, best play, and much more. You won't want to miss it. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. When it comes to getting or staying in shape, nothing feels as good as that feeling of accomplishment, of hitting your fitness goals and feeling great about yourself. You can talk about hitting new goals this upcoming year, and Echelon can get you there. Echelon offers the next generation of connected fitness bikes, fitness mirrors, rowing machines, and their Echelon Stride Smart Treadmill. No matter what your favorite fitness activity is, Echelon gives you a fun and challenging workout from the comfort of your home. The EX7S is Echelon's latest state-of-the-art innovation that takes cycling to the next level. The EX7S connected bike is built with performance, flexibility, and durability in mind. The EX7S is the bike for a competitor at heart. Their world-class instructors will motivate you with thousands of daily live and on-demand studio-level classes always available whenever you need them. Unlike their competitors, Echelon is affordable for everyone, and one membership lets up to five family members all work out at the same time. Right now, you can try any Echelon fitness equipment at home for 30 days. Go to echelonfit.com/lockedon. That's echelonfit.com/lockedon. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Blue Friday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me, as always on Blue Friday, my co-host, Nick Lee. Betting on the NFL doesn't have to be a guessing game if you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling. Get daily picks and quick hitting advice to make the smartest possible wagers. Subscribe to the Locked On Bets podcast brought to you by betonline.ag, wherever you get podcasts. We unfortunately, Nick, have reached the end of the season, but one of the cool things that we've always enjoyed doing whenever the Seahawks wrap up their season, we like to dish out end of season superlatives. We are going to start on the offensive side of the football with the most obvious one, the MVP. I'm obviously going to go with quarterback Russell Wilson here, but before I talk about Wilson's season, you and I discussed this beforehand. You decided to go a different direction here this season.
I did. Obviously, that when your team wins 12 games and you win the division, usually the quarterback is at the center of it. And for the most part, Russell Wilson was. I'm not going to say he had a terrible season or anything like that, but he has pretty high standards. I'm going to go with DK Metcalf. And I know that maybe they have a symbiotic relationship, Wilson and Metcalf. One succeeded because of the other, that kind of thing, or probably most likely it was because Wilson helped out Metcalf. But DK Metcalf set a franchise single season receiving yards record with 1,303 yards, 10 receiving touchdowns. I mean, he really put himself in some rarefied air in franchise history for a receiver, and he's just getting started. And he took over a few games. He had five 100-yard games, including two 150-plus yard games, and he quietly had 96 yards and two touchdowns in that playoff loss. Yeah, there was an unfortunate incident on the sidelines, but after that, he got going a little bit. In fact, if you look at his two wild card games, I know that we're talking a little bit about last season, he has 12 catches for 256 yards and three touchdowns in two wild card games in his career. So he's established himself as one of the most dynamic receivers in the NFL that's tough to cover, because that was still the same Jalen Ramsey for the Rams there on the other side. And there's some times where they took advantage of Ramsey not being one-on-one in coverage. But for the most part, Metcalf did what Metcalf has done all season. That's catch some balls, make some guys miss, and just out-physical guys. And he clearly is one of the most impressive physical specimens in the NFL, especially at the receiver position. And so as far as value goes, you know, where is this team if Metcalf is replaced by an average receiver? If he doesn't have the season he does, I'm not sure they reach. I'm not sure they win the division. I'm not sure they win 11, 12 games without DK Metcalf and the dominance that he inserted in several games.
I seriously considered picking Metcalf for this, but I still have to go with Wilson just because, as crazy as it is, I know the end of the season did not go as Wilson and the offense in general wanted it to. The second half was rough. But, I mean, he threw 40 touchdown passes. That's the most he's ever had in his career. It's a Seahawks team record. And I know 28 of those came in the first half. He had a historic first half for the Seahawks. And then the second half, his performance fell off substantially. But still, the half 40, you know, you have 4,000 passing yards, 40 passing touchdowns. He completed around 66% of his passes. And so he still had a fantastic season overall. It obviously was a very strange one considering how the first half contrasted with the second half. But when you look at the overall big picture, again, we all know where this team would be at if they did not have Russell Wilson in the lineup. He is still the most valuable player on this team. And so while I have a great respect for what DK Metcalf did, Wilson still got to be the guy. He also had more rushing yards than he had since 2017. And so his ability to impact the game with his legs was still very valuable for the Seahawks as well. Let's look at the most improved player on offense. I'm going to go on the offensive line here, Nick. I actually had kind of a hard time on this because it was tough to identify a player that really jumped out that had improved a lot this year. But I think Jordan Simmons is one of those players that really took a big step forward. And I think the big thing is that he stayed healthy for most of the season. He had a calf injury that cost him one game, but otherwise he was able to suit up every other game. He started a bunch of games for Mike Iupati at left guard. He filled in at times the right guard position for Damian Lewis when he got banged up in a couple of games. So Simmons was extremely reliable. I thought he struggled a bit down the stretch. When you've got to face Aaron Donald two times in three games, though, that is dramatically going to impact your pass protection grades when you're going against arguably the best defensive tackle that's ever played the game. Nonetheless, I thought Simmons gave them a big lift with his ability to play both guard spots. I thought he had several games this year where he played at a very high level. He, to me, is easily the most improved player on this offense.
You know, we're kind of thinking along the same lines there, Corbin, and I actually did lean towards Simmons, but I'm going to stay on the offensive line but go a different route. I'm going to go Ethan Posick, and here's why. We wrote him off, at least I did, before the season started. You know, we had Justin Britt, and, you know, it was before he was cut, and it was pretty clear that, in at least towards the end of last year, that he was in the doghouse with the coaches. And so, you know, something happened. He only played in 4 games last year. He was injured most of the year. He only started 5 games in 2018, 2019 combined. And he started 14 games in 2020 in a playoff game and played 100% of the snaps in those games and was a pretty reliable center. And yeah, he had some moments here and there. And like you mentioned, playing Aaron Donald 2 out of 3 weeks is never going to do any favors for offensive line numbers. But he didn't get terrible grades from Pro Football Focus. And I just think it was an admirable job going from guard to center and really taking over that position because, I mean, you and I both know football, and I played along the offensive line a little bit in high school, and playing center is like the quarterback of the offensive line. You can't, it's not just a position where you line up and just hit the guy in front of you. It's cerebral. You gotta make the protection calls. You gotta pick up blitzes. You got to shift some protections and some blocking schemes if necessary, and you got to be aware. And Ethan Posick, I thought, did that pretty seamlessly after having a pretty turbulent first 3 seasons in Seattle. And I know that I'm a big approximate value guy. I think it's because of my baseball background with WAR, wins above replacement. I think approximate value, I'm trying to find that same thing. And he actually had a 7 in his approximate value this year, which is easily a career high and one of the better numbers along the offensive line for the Seahawks. So, yes, offensive line overall had some really, really good things happening and improving. And I'm going to go Ethan Posick as my most improved.
Now the unsung hero, the guy that maybe isn't getting enough headlines, that played a big role for the Seahawks offensively. I can't believe that I'm putting a guy that's been an All-Pro twice in his career as the unsung hero. But I just feel like somehow Duane Brown still goes under the radar for how well that he plays. He's 35 years old, and I think you can make an argument he had his best season since the Seahawks traded for him. He did not make an All-Pro team, but this is a guy that had a fantastic year. I'm still amazed how athletic he is when they run to the outside. He gets out in space and bulldozes people. He's just an incredible athlete, always has been. The fact that he still is at this stage of his career, he looks like he's still got a couple more seasons at least of high-quality football playing that left tackle position. That has turned out to be one of the best trades that John Schneider has ever made. And again, he's one of the big-time stars that I just think kind of goes under the radar that continues to play well and had a fantastic 2020 season.
Man, we're just going to cover the whole offensive line here because we did not share some of the answers beforehand. I'm going to go with the other tackle here as an unsung hero, and that's Brandon Schell. He came in. Not a lot of fanfare. And when you come from the Jets, there's not a ton of expectations, unfortunately, with that organization. But he exceeded those. The affirmation for me of how good he played is you could certainly tell when he was not playing. You all of a sudden, like, why is it all this pressure coming from the right side? Oh, Brandon Schell's not in the game. That's why. And you know, Cedric Aboye, he had some moments there. And Chad Wheeler and all those guys. But Brandon Schell really stood out. 72.1 Pro Football Focus grade, pretty darn respectable there. And I think a really telling stat as well that NC Hawks fans, especially those on Twitter, will enjoy is that Brandon Schell only had 5 penalties all year after Jermaine Ifedi in 2019, your right tackle, had 13. So he had almost a third of the penalties of Ifedi in 2019. So he was not as penalized, and I thought it was just as good, if not much better, than it was an upgrade at right tackle this year. So good on him, and I hope he can stay healthy because really, if Duane Brown and Brandon Schell can stay healthy, those are two possible headaches that you can sleep well at night knowing your two tackle positions are pretty set next year.
So we're going to go to this next one, top rookie. So I'm going to be going from the most experienced offensive lineman. This really is an offensive-centric order that we've got here. This one is pretty obvious, though. We're talking top rookie. I'm pretty sure you and I have the same answer here. Damian Lewis to come out and start all 16 games as a rookie, a third-round pick. I mean, they were blown away by this kid in his first training camp. And Ed Orgeron, who used to be an assistant for Pete Carroll, now is the head coach at LSU, Lewis was on his championship team last year with the Tigers, and he just raved to Pete Carroll and said, "This, you're going to love this kid. He's going to come in and make a difference immediately." And that's just what he did. And honestly, the thing that really stood out to me this season about Damian Lewis, he obviously is a road grader in the run game. He had his moments where he exceeded my expectations in pass protection. He had some games that were rougher than others. But the game against the Cardinals in Week 11, he has never played a game in his life at the center position. And he ends up starting there. Second game that Ethan Posick was sidelined, they decided not to go with Kyle Fuller because he was battling an injury of his own. And Damian Lewis goes in, and there were some mistakes, but for him to go in there and snap the ball for 50, 60 snaps to Russell Wilson and overall have a pretty solid game, and the Seahawks ended up winning that contest by 7 points, really gave the Seahawks a lift. It showed you the kind of player and the kind of character that the Seahawks have brought in, and I think they now got a staple on this offensive line for years to come in Damian Lewis.
Wholeheartedly agree there. That he's my pick, too. He had the second highest approximate value along the offensive line after Dwayne Brown, and just the willingness, like you mentioned, to play center and do it admirably in the absence of Posick. And really, he just shows that he's a good kid that just wants to play football and hit somebody. And boy, does he hit people. He was a big part of when the ground game was going and going well. Damian Lewis was usually at the forefront.
When we come back for the third quarter, we're going to have our next four superlatives on the offensive side of the football. Biggest surprise, biggest disappointment, best play, and worst play. When we return, you're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Are we ready for some football? The Chiefs and the Browns, the Bills and the Ravens, Packers, Rams, and Saints and Buccaneers preparing for their matchups in the divisional round of the NFL playoffs. There is only one place that has you covered and one place we trust, betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Nick Lee for our Blue Friday episode. Continuing our end-of-season superlatives on the offensive side of the football, we just looked at the MVP, the most improved, unsung hero, and top rookie. Now let's move to the biggest surprise for the Seahawks, Nick. You mentioned this player earlier for one of the other awards. To me, Ethan Posick was the biggest surprise for this football team because, as you mentioned, a lot of people, including both of us, we wrote him off going into the 2020 season. I thought for sure when they signed B.J. Finney last March that B.J. Finney was going to be the new starting center. They released Justin Britt, and that further solidified my idea that it was going to be Finney that was going to be the guy. And yet, here came Posick coming back from two injury-marred seasons. And he was the front runner from day one in training camp. B.J. Finney never had a chance to even turn that into a competition. And Finney ended up ultimately being used as a trade chip to get Carlos Dunlap at the middle of the season. So Posick didn't even make that a competition, had a really strong training camp, played really well most of the season. He had his struggles in their playoff game. Again, when you're going against Aaron Donald and company, that's just a different animal that you are dealing with along the defensive line. But overall, I thought Posick had a fantastic season, and he's at least going to give the Seahawks some pause about whether or not they want to re-sign him. I thought going into the season that it was probably a done deal. He was going to play this year. If he made the team, he was going to play this year, and then the Seahawks are going to move on. I think now at least, depending on the price tag, there may be some consideration about him coming back on a shorter-term deal and maybe still being your starter at the center position for the next couple of seasons.
Well, I guess we can thank Ethan Posick for Carlos Dunlap in a way. So thank you, Ethan. Thanks, Ethan. My biggest surprise is I'm gonna cheat a little bit. Technically, he counts as offense because he provides points. Jason Myers. Okay. Jason Myers is... He went 24 for 24 in field goal attempts and set the franchise record with a 61-yard field goal. I mean, that is a far cry from the days of Blair Walsh and Sebastian Janikowski, really anything between Jason Myers and Steven Hauschka. And it's nice not to have to worry about the kicking game again. I found myself even tuning out during field goals, because in my mind, all right, that's 3 points. You know, that's, he's automatic. And I, now the season is over, so I won't be like the Dr. Pepper commercial and be accused of jinxing when he's, when I say he's automatic, because he was automatic. And it was a pleasant surprise that he, I knew that he had it in him, because he had those really good, a couple good seasons before he arrived in Seattle. But it was just really nice to not have to worry about the kicking game. I mean, obviously there's a bit of a worry that he'll miss a big kick, because that's just the nature of football. But Jason Myers is one of the top five kickers in the NFL right now, maybe even higher than that. And he was an absolute snub for multiple recognitions in the, and after the season was over. So I'm going to go with Jason Myers, since he provides points, he counts for offense.
Yeah, since you cheated, man, I would have probably picked him too there if I thought we were including kickers. Anyway, biggest disappointment now on the offensive side of the football. Again, we prefer positivity, but this is also a show that is all about reality. And there were certainly some players on the offensive side of the football that did not live up to expectations. And I hate to keep piling it on this guy, because Rob and I talked about him earlier this week, that his free agent contract, it didn't prove to be a worthwhile investment. And that's Greg Olsen. And it stinks, because Greg Olsen has had a borderline Hall of Fame career. He's one of the best tight ends that has played in the last 20 years. And he was a three-time Pro Bowler for the Carolina Panthers. He was the first tight end in NFL history with three straight seasons of 1,000-plus receiving yards. A few other guys have done that since, but he has been one of the best tight ends out there, and I thought there was still some juice left in him. If you were out at training camp, Greg Olsen was one of the superstars of training camp. He and Russell Wilson looked to hit it off immediately, but that chemistry just never translated to the game field. And Olsen finished his one season here in Seattle. I'll be surprised if he's back next year. Pete Carroll wouldn't rule it out, but I will be very surprised if he's back. He finished with just 24 receptions, and maybe what I'm most disappointed about, I really thought he was going to help him in the red zone. He had one touchdown this season. Add in the fact he had another foot injury, a fascia tear. His recovery was remarkable, but didn't do much after he came back nonetheless. You add in that to pay him $7 million in 1 year contract, you just didn't get near the bang for your buck that you needed for this to be a good free agent signing. And for as great of a player as he's been throughout his career, it was just a letdown, the production that they got from him.
Well, speaking of letdown, I'm going to go a bit off the charts here again. I'm going to pick, this is hard to say, but the biggest disappointment for me was Russell Wilson. And here's why. Specifically the last four games, including the playoff game. And we've all been conditioned to believe that no matter how bad the game gets. I was actually just telling a friend the other day who was despairing in the middle of the Rams game. We were texting back and forth. I said, you know what? We got Russell Wilson. Okay, no matter how bad the game gets, no matter how bad the Seahawks look, even on offense, as long as you get Russell Wilson the ball down by less than 7 points late in the fourth quarter, he's going to get it done probably. It's a foregone conclusion. He's going to get it done. We saw it time and time again over the last 9 years and even earlier this season. So what happened? The last four games, he went from, not even just the last four games, he went from MVP frontrunner in the first month, month and a half, 2 months, to kind of looking pretty mediocre for the better part of the last, I don't know, since Thanksgiving even. But especially the last few games, including that playoff game, just utterly disappointing. And whether that's being at odds with Brian Schottenheimer, I'm not sure I believe that wholeheartedly. But he went from MVP frontrunner to not being able to outduel an injured Jared Goff at home in January. That's a pretty far fall from grace, if you ask me. So really, I guess what I'm saying is the biggest disappointment on offense for me was Russell Wilson's finish to the season. Extremely disappointing for the standard he sets for himself and we have for him.
Yeah, there's no denying the second half, the production. It was the most prolonged slump of Russell Wilson's career. He has typically been a guy that when he has a rough game, he's able to bounce back, and yet he was cobbling together multiple games where his completion percentage was way down and he was missing open receivers. And there's obviously a lot of factors at play here. Clearly, Pete Carroll felt they needed to change with who was calling the plays. I don't think Brian Schottenheimer was as big of an issue there, but there's got to be a scapegoat when your offense doesn't perform, and they weren't going to have their $35 million quarterback be that guy. And so he's got to step it up. And obviously this first half was the opposite direction where it was just incredible. So it was a disappointing finish, Let's talk individual plays here. The best offensive play from the entire 2020 season. Nick, in your opinion, what was the number one play for Seattle's offense?
Well, to Shadi's credit, he called some beautiful games, and I'm going to miss him, and I'm hoping the Seahawks know what they're doing by letting him go and finding a guy that will still put Russell Wilson and DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett and all those guys in positions to succeed, because there were some great, great play calls in there. I'm going to go to one that wasn't maybe necessarily a beautiful play or a fun trick play or whatever. The Vikings game. The Vikings game was pretty exciting at the end. Maybe not wasn't that exciting at the beginning when the Seahawks were down, I believe it was 13-0 at halftime. But in the fourth quarter, and this was an example of talking about with Russell Wilson, even I had my friend was just going down. I mean, I had to talk him off a ledge. I'm like, look, it's Russell Wilson. Okay, he's going to get it done. And as soon as Russell Wilson got the ball down by 5 with a minute 57 left in the fourth quarter against the Vikings, I just knew in my heart of hearts he was going to find a way to get it done. And it wasn't just Russell Wilson. It was DK Metcalf. DK Metcalf got open for 39 yards earlier in the drive, but the individual play, because that's what we're talking about, is individual play, was that 4th and 6. It's 20 seconds left in the game, fourth and goal from the 6-yard line. So basically, you know, you don't get 6 yards, you don't score a touchdown here, you lose. I mean, that's just simple. And Russell Wilson threw a pass to DK Metcalf, and both on Wilson's part with the pass, Metcalf's part with a catch, and it was a game-winning, almost walk-off touchdown pass. It was a thing of beauty, and it was kind of also not just a coming out party for Metcalf, because he had already came out as a really good, darn good receiver, but that was just another notch and one of the higher highlights of DK Metcalf's Pro Bowl season was this exciting play. They ended up winning 27-26 in a big game, and really, I mean, when you look back, that's a game that certainly the Seahawks had to have to get to 12 wins and maybe even win the division. They might not win the division without a play like that. So it was just fun to get it, you know, fourth down, last chance to get it done. That was fun.
Leave it to me to pick a play from a running back. We started putting these together, and then best play, this play just kept popping in my mind because everybody remembers the iconic run by Marshawn Lynch. Last week it was the 10-year anniversary from the Beast Quake against the Saints in the postseason, and this run was not quite the level of that one, but against the Philadelphia Eagles, Chris Carson in week 12, it was less than a 20-yard touchdown run. So again, it was not the length of Marshawn Lynch's, but it was a beast mode-esque touchdown run. He found a crease at the second level, and then there were 3 or 4 defenders inside the 10-yard line that were all ready to take him down, and he just refused to go to the ground. He was powering through, keeping those Pistons running, throwing guys off them, and somehow bulldozed his way into the end zone. And it was just one of those tone-setting touchdown runs that, honestly, we haven't seen very many of those the last couple of years. But Chris Carson's always been a guy that's capable of that, and that's one of the reasons he's been such a big part of the Seahawks' offensive identity, and maybe why Pete Carroll now is lamenting that they didn't use him more this season. And his ability to get in the end zone there really fired up an offense that they were already in the middle of their second half struggles. They had their issues in that game, but that play was one that ignited that offense a little bit and helped them escape Philadelphia with a big road win. Let's talk worst plays now, and we're going to wrap up on a negative note here. What, in your opinion, was the worst play for the Seahawks offensively in the 2020 season?
I'm going to stick with regular season here because I have a feeling you're going to go maybe a play that happened in a playoff game, that one that everyone's thinking of. Maybe not worst play is the name. This might be the most embarrassing. It's the DK Metcalf fumble out of the end zone against against the Cowboys. I mean, that was just a thing of beauty as far as the pass, the play call, the catch. I mean, it was just – that was another like, hey, DK Metcalf is a different dude. And this team is – and Russell Wilson right now is on a different level. That was at their peak connection. And then he had to just ruin the ride by kind of galloping into the end zone and getting it knocked out and being it for a touchback and losing the ball, losing the touchdown. And luckily the Seahawks win that game. If the Seahawks lose that game, woo, that's going to be – that's quite the black mark on the season and on DK Metcalf's resume. So, and you could tell that, I mean, I have the utmost respect for DK Metcalf. From what I've heard, just a hard worker. He wants to do the little things, and he just let it get away from him a little bit there in his head. And he made a point to not do that again. And he had a fantastic season. So, kind of turning that into a positive spin afterwards, he might've come out better for it, but really that was just an embarrassing moment. I mean, you see all the Twitter. I was actually driving at the time, from Portland, and all the NFL radio shows were like, "Oh, watch this play by Metcalf. What a moron." And it was all over Twitter. It was all over everything. And it was very embarrassing. So, yeah, not the brightest moment in the world, but for Metcalf, at least it turned around.
Yeah, you know, I was originally going to say the screen pass that got picked off in the playoff game on Saturday, but I'm actually going to go to a play that I believe played a big role in Pete Carroll going conservative mode with this offense. And it was in that Week 7 game, the second half against the Arizona Cardinals, when Seattle's offense had scored 34 points and then they were basically shut down in the fourth quarter and overtime. The Seahawks had the football near midfield, and I still don't know what happened. There was some kind of a communication error, but Russell Wilson had already thrown two interceptions this game. This might have been the worst one he threw all year, including the one across his body to Will Disley against the Rams in Week 10. That's another one I consider for this. But you had the rookie Isaiah Simmons dropping back into coverage. I don't know what route Tyler Lockett was running, but that was the intended receiver, Wilson said after the game. Lockett was running one direction. The throw was going the other direction, and it went right into the hands of an outstretched Simmons for the pick. It was a devastating interception. The Cardinals went down, ended up getting a game-winning field goal, and they secured the comeback win. And that was one of those games. If Seattle would have held on, they were up 10 with 3 minutes to go in that game in regulation, then they probably have the number one seed in the NFC. They wouldn't even have been playing on Saturday. We would be getting ready for a divisional round game with them fresh off a bye. So that was a huge play in their season that ultimately may have cost them having that number one seed. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Nick at Nick Lee 51. Subscribe to our show, whatever podcast platform you use, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify. You can do that by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. When we come back after the weekend for our Monday show, Rob and I are going to investigate 5 burning questions the Seahawks must answer on the offensive side of the ball this offseason. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the divisional round games. Go Hawks.